All right, guys, welcome to the show. This is Deborah Gets Red Pilled, episode somewhere up there around 150. What's going on, Deborah?
Not too much.
How's your day?
My day was very good.
Yeah.
Beautiful
day. That's fantastic
day.
To hear. Yeah. Nice day here. Hot.
Yeah.
Hot, muggy, overcast. Weird. There might be a fire. I think there might be a fire somewhere. So kind of that hazy, muggy Oregon, Northwest Oregon weather. So
we got like 6 drops of rain yesterday.
Yeah. That's not enough.
No, it's not. But it's been very muggy here also.
Yeah. It's wet here in the mornings, you know. I got a bunch of hay out in my pasture that I gotta it's all baled up. I gotta get it in my barn. And it's it all molded on the bottom. So I had to go out yesterday and like flip them all over, and I got to go get them in the barn, but it was like 90 degrees today. I didn't want to do it. So I made the gate to get out to the pasture isn't big enough to get a trailer in there.
Oh.
So I'm going to have to do it like a whole bunch of loads with my pickup truck.
Uh-huh.
So it's going to take a while and be hard work, but I just got to buckle
down
and
bales?
Do it. I got 110. There's a bunch out there. A bunch go to my neighbor, and 110 of them are mine.
Uh-huh.
So I'm probably have to buy a few more to get us through the winter for all the livestock. So hopefully that works out. But guys, we are a value for value show. That is not something that needs to be a perpetual statement. We are available for sponsorship. If anyone out there would like to reach out, let me know what your proposition is and what you're hawking. Maybe I want to help you out. Maybe we can be in a mutual beneficial relationship. So we are value for value. We are accepting donations and whatever value you can give to the show. We have an executive producer on this show. This week it's going to be Drew Misson, our buddy that's down there in Australia.
Down under. Drew.
Yeah. So thanks, Drew.
Yeah.
Drew is very active in our Telegram chat, and he is transforming his what seems like a mundane suburban home into a beautiful suburban homestead. He posts all the pictures of it up there and all the work that he gets done every day. And he's making me feel lazy because he's got one of those houses. He's got one of those like really clean garages, you know?
Oh, well, you know what? If you had moved into a house that was unlike yours, any other house, I'm sure you'd have a really clean garage also.
Yeah. Well, you know what's cool about our house now? What's really cool about our house right now is that we have an AC blowing right now. And it's, it's 90 degrees outside right now, 6:30 p.m. And probably about 70% humidity, 90 degrees. And it's a cool 70 degrees in here right now. It's so nice.
Awesome.
So I can podcast with a shirt on now and not offend anyone.
Well, the way the camera's situated, I don't think you've offended anybody.
Yeah, I should have done it like this. Just
there you go.
But other than that, everything's going well. We got our little pigs, a baby pool. And then I went out there today and ran the hose and the mud and the dirt for them so that they can make a natural wallow. I think they like that better than a pool. So hopefully they get one of those going.
Probably keep the flies off them also.
Yeah, we were a little worried that we were going to have to start spending a whole bunch of money on feed for them. The guys we got them from, they had a deal with like the local food pantry, and they would go and get all their expired bread for free. And we called around everywhere, and I went to all the local grocery stores and asked, and there's one guy who's just got the whole area on lockdown.
Oh,
so nothing's available for free. But up here we have this kind of bread. It's called Franz bread. It's like our local, it's like Wonder Bread. They make like all the different kinds of bread. I think they distribute oral wheat too, but they have bakeries in Portland and like in the bad neighborhoods of Portland. So it always smells good in the bad neighborhoods, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll let you like fill up a whole grocery cart full of about to expire bread for like $12.
Oh.
So, and there's one right by Emily's work. So she Perfect. filled up like the whole back of her car for $12. And we got to feed these guys like 6 loaves of bread a day. Just these 2 little babies.
Oh my God. Is that what their diet will continue to be?
Yeah.
As they mature?
And then just all the food scraps. We don't have very many food scraps because we didn't get a garden in the ground this year. And we eat almost, you know, everything that we cook, and we don't waste a bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I found like a rotten orange in the fruit bowl, and I just like threw it out the back door, and they ate it. But so they go and slop around in the pool out there and blow bubbles. It's pretty cool.
It's so great.
Yeah.
But I cannot wait to see them.
Yeah, you're coming up soon.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be visiting. I think I got an email today that they're shipping the new mattress for the trailer. I think you guys should sleep in the house. It's much nicer in here than the trailer. But it's all up to you.
We'll see. Yeah.
Yeah. You'll get to use the new bathroom, all that stuff.
Yay.
Speaking of visitors, this Sunday, guess who's coming to my house?
Sunday, guess who's coming to your house?
You're never going to guess.
I'm never going to guess. Okay, tell me.
Our old friend, Monica Perez.
Is that right?
Yeah. She is going up, and she's going up on flying to, I don't know if she's flying to Seattle or to Bellingham, but she's going up to the Chuds homestead for a day.
Uh-huh.
And she's driving down to some guy that's a big fan of her show, owns a berry farm right outside of Portland. So she's going to pick him up, and then they're going to drive up. And then my friend Nate from the Reality Czars podcast, he lives in Scappoose, which is 2 towns down the road from us, and he is going to come up too. And he has I've never had this, but I heard it's really good. Pig head. He has a pig head, and he's going to make tacos. He's a Mexican guy.
Pig head tacos.
Yeah, so we're going to have pig head tacos.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited for that. I haven't had good Mexican food in 4 years. So
you guys going to sit together and do a podcast?
I don't think so. Like maybe someday when people come over and stuff. Like Chud and I talked about doing that when they came and visited. Mm-hmm. It's just like, I got you here. I'd kind of rather just hang out and talk, not have any expectations. My place isn't set up for 2 people to do a podcast. It's hard. Like if you remember when Emily and I did a couple together, the mic's not good enough. Really, 1 mic for 2 people is not the best. And I don't want to set up for 2 people right now.
Mm-hmm.
So this AC wiped us out. We are poor again. So. Uh-huh. We've done a lot of work. So we put in the bathroom this summer. We waterproofed the basement. We put in an AC, and then we redid the whole kitchen. So
that's a lot.
And then plus all the materials for me to do stuff around here. And we bought a tractor. So
that's big stuff. All big stuff.
Yeah, and I don't have a job anymore. So
is that your kombucha?
This is tapache.
Uh-huh.
The last one, I think. So, but yeah, I went over, I applied. I'm going a little stir crazy out here. So I went over to Longview today. That's the closest town over in Washington. And applied for a part-time job at the feed store.
Uh-huh.
So see how that goes.
Yeah.
At least make a little bit of side money just by building materials or to make the tractor payment and stuff.
And talk to human beings.
Yeah. Learn about animals and stuff. Everybody there is really knowledgeable. So
uh-huh.
At least I'll be learning and stuff like that. But other than that, have you been keeping up on the news or anything?
Not really. That's kind of my standard response whenever you ask that. I mean, I know, stuff's going on in Florida and stuff's going on.
What kind of stuff's going on in Florida?
Well, you know, the FBI raid.
Oh, yeah, Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah, yeah, I guess that's old news now.
Yeah, I've listened to a lot of people talking about it. Nobody can really make any sense out of it. A lot of theories, but who knows? So, yeah. But, well, I wanted to bring you on a little early today. It's mostly up to me to make these shows happen. So I've been doing all the booking, all everything like that. But I have not been properly preparing.
And you're freezing.
I'm frozen. Okay, my internet is unstable.
You're okay now.
So it's my job. I do all the booking. I get everybody on here. Mm-hmm. But the past couple times we've had people on, well, more than the past. Like, I got to get you involved more in the shows. And I think the shows we do, all three of us together, plus a guest, I know it's hard for you to get in there. So I think I got to figure out some way to kind of revamp the show. I think we should do more shows. We should separate them out more. Just you and I more. Maybe with a guest sometimes, maybe not. But the problem with not having a guest is that I have to do much more research. And, well, I don't mind doing all the talking, but I have to do a lot of research and stuff like that as well. So, but I really want you to get involved more, ask more questions. You're a very smart person and you have a unique perspective on things. And I think people want to listen to what you have to say more than you know.
I hear ya.
Yeah. That's it.
I hear you. That's it. Yeah, it's none of this is easy.
Yeah.
For any of us. And this is just so completely foreign to me, you know. I'm good at small talk. I can make people feel comfortable, but I'm not especially good at holding a full conversation, it seems like.
But you do have a perspective, and I know that you have questions. Like, we had Don Jeffries on, and he's talking about a lot of current events and a lot of old things that had previously happened throughout history, you know, recent history, your lifetime history. And he's kind of, you know, the same age as you and probably the same political leanings as you, maybe a little bit more conservative than you. But I felt like there's more that I think that you've got to have questions for those guys, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes I do try to chime in and I'm not forceful enough.
Yeah. Yeah, I get you. It's hard to get that timing down when you can like kind of butt in and ask questions. That's why I kind of try to stop every once in a while and ask if you have any questions. So,
yeah.
But I need to do a little more prep for shows, even the ones that just Chud and I do with another guest, because we've had a couple people on lately and they haven't been up to my standards of what, like, if I heard them, I wouldn't probably enjoy that show. But that's my standards as well. And a lot of times I'm being harder on myself than maybe other people are, because there's been shows that I haven't been happy with and people have like contacted me and said they really liked them. So, you know, but I think if you and I do more solo stuff and I mean, the shows that we have where it's just you and me talking, people really like those. And I think people really like the intros. So, like, what do you want to learn about? Do you want to learn about anything?
Yeah, I want to learn about a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm on the spot right now, so I'm not going to be able to come up with much, but yeah. I want to learn about...
I don't know.
I don't know.
No
keep
idea.
Talking. I'll come up with stuff. I mean, there's a lot of stuff I want to learn about, but I'm, you know, is it interesting to other people?
It doesn't matter. We like nobody listens to the show anyway. Like our viewership is so small. We're not doing it for other people really, you know?
Okay. Uh-huh.
We're doing it to make ourselves happy, to have a conversation with somebody that we normally wouldn't get to. And then if we're doing that and people want to listen and, I think, mm-hmm. you know, the being genuine is what people want to hear.
Child psychology.
Well, there's got to be the conspiracy spin to it too, you know?
Uh-huh.
But I mean, yeah, we can get into all sorts of stuff about talk therapy and how it totally screws people up and like, you know, hold on for a second. Okay, guys, sorry, I keep pausing. We're having some internet connectivity issues, and instead of freezing and waiting for it to come back and doing all that, I'm pausing every time. It's getting wonky. So what were you saying, Deborah? What's going on?
I just saw a headline. I haven't read it yet, that there's going to be another trip to the moon. NASA's sending somebody else to the moon.
When?
Or sending somebody to the moon.
Who? When?
I was wondering if you'd read about it yet. So,
well, it's not possible.
Well, I'll find that article and I'll send it to you.
Because they've been saying that for a long time. I mean, Obama was saying it, George Bush was saying it. It's not, we can't leave lower Earth orbit. So, I think, but what they're just planning it, or did you see that they've got some spectacular telescope that looks at the outer space, and some scientist
in China?
No, some scientist in Spain, I think, like took a slice of chorizo and took a picture of it and said that it was from that telescope. And like, yeah.
What would a slice of chorizo look like?
I mean, under like a microscope or a telescope or whatever, it looked like what they say is a planet looks like.
Oh, uh-huh. Yeah, maybe so.
So.
Huh. Yeah, there's a telescope in China that's supposedly the largest and the most, you know, 1,000 times, I don't know how you would label measurement in a telescope, but China's got a big one.
Yeah. And you believe that who says that? China says they have it?
Yeah.
Where is it at? The Wuhan virology lab?
Probably. Yeah, oh, I don't know. I saw a picture of it, though.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I've also seen pictures of Earth that NASA puts out, you know, that are not real. Did you see the new CDC guidelines that have come out recently?
Yes, where we no longer have to stay 6 feet apart. And
I've got them right here.
Let's read. Good.
Those exposed to the virus are no longer required to quarantine. Unvaccinated people now have the same guidance as vaccinated people. Students can stay in class after being exposed to the virus. It's no longer recommended to screen those without symptoms. Who has been saying that things like this should have been happening the whole time?
Well, I believe that was you.
me and a million other people. Do you think we're owed an apology?
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, it wrecked a lot of people's lives.
Yeah, wrecked them. Nearly killed them.
Yeah.
There's dead people because of those guidelines, you know, those old guidelines.
Yeah, that's true.
There's people that killed themselves. There's people who don't have their kids anymore. There's all sorts of crazy stuff.
You know, people who couldn't afford or couldn't get treated at a hospital because there were no beds because they were all taken up.
Yeah, people lost custody battles because of it, because they didn't want to get vaccinated. It was brought up in court.
Jesus.
It's awful.
Yeah.
It's Emily and I, I brought it up last time. Our hound dog Leroy's coming to the end. We were going to take him to a naturopathic veterinarian.
Mm-hmm.
And we went on their website to see if there's anything we need to do before we go in. And they're allowing one person in per pet with a mask if they have proof of vaccination. This is as of yesterday. That was Wednesday, August 17th. They're requiring masks and vaccines to go into their business.
Hmm.
So we canceled the appointment.
Yeah.
You know,
that was a good move.
Yeah, there's a bunch of businesses by Emily's business that have recently put up signs after those guidelines came out that said still masking, like people celebrating it. If you don't think that there's something more at play, such as spirituality and spirits in the world causing people to behave the way they are, it's a new religion. It's so crazy. Our friend Buck Johnson, he's had two podcasts with this Orthodox priest named Father Turbo Quails. And this guy, he was in a punk rock, like a unknown punk rock band from LA in the 90s that I used to love.
Wow.
And I heard him on his show randomly, and he's an Orthodox priest now. Black guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done two podcasts with Buck Johnson. It's part two is his most recent podcast, and then he did one like a month ago with him. And I recommend everybody that listens to this show go back and listen to both those one after the other. They are fantastic. I'm listening to the second one for the second time because it's so densely full of stuff that I had to listen to it twice. But at one point he talks about how like this whole thing is a religion, and you know, we've heard that over and over and over again, but he the analogy he makes is that the mask is the cross, and the vaccine is the Holy Communion. And I was just like, damn, that nails it. So
nails it into the cross. His name is Quail Turbo, Father Quail Turbo.
Turbo Quails.
Turbo Quails.
Yeah. So okay, yeah, if you go to Counterflow Podcast, it's the most recent one. He was an old oi band called The Authority from Los Angeles. So yeah, I recommend everybody listen to those and support Buck. He's a great dude. I text with him now. I got his phone number and stuff, so it's pretty cool.
Very cool.
Yeah. Our guest is here.
Okay.
Should we just let him in or should we pause? What do you want to do?
Either way. Let's pause. Let him get his feet wet.
All right, guys, we're back. And today we are so excited to have our guest, who is a former U.S. Army paratrooper and combat vet, historian, conspiracy analyst. He is the proprietor of Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange, a conspiracy analyst, host of the Arterburn radio transmission, paratrooper, and one third of America Unplugged with Don Jeffries and our best friend, Billy Ray Valentine. Tony Arterburn, welcome to the show. We're really happy to have you, man.
Oh, I'm really glad to be here. I've actually wanted to be on for a while. I first heard you guys, almost 2 years ago on Billy Ray's show, and I've listened to many shows, and then you've been on America Unplugged with me, and then I get to talk to Deborah. So,
yeah,
great day. Yeah.
It's always a good time. We're ready for some weapons grade truth. So,
yeah, one of my little phrases that I like keep around, and weaponsgradetruth.com if you want to find my podcast.
Yeah. You're putting out a lot of content recently, and I listen to it all, and it's fantastic. I really, really enjoy your take on everything. And we're both born in 1979. So that's pretty cool because you did a show recently all about that year and all the weird stuff that happened. And in 5 days, 40, let's see, next on Monday, 43 years ago, I was born. So
I know. Oh, excellent. I was born on December 26th, so you're just a little bit older than me. Just a little bit.
Right on.
And I'm just a little bit older than both of you.
Just a tiny bit, though.
Yeah.
Not much.
Not much.
Yeah, so you're in the Ozark Mountains. How's that going?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Started coming up here when I was around 13 with my grandfather Morris Artivern. He was, you know, from North Texas, and around 1993, he said, "Hey, where do you want to buy some land?" And I said, "Let's go to the Ozarks, Pop." And he said, "Why?" And I said, "Well, I just read a book on coon hunting." And it was like the follow-up book to Where the Red Fern Grows. Have you ever heard, read that story or seen the movie?
Yeah.
It was the follow-up book to that, and it was based in the Ozarks. And I said, let's just go and find it. So we drove around and finally found the place that he would end up buying. And then I ended up buying the 20-acre tract that's it was like the entrance to the other place. So I'm here now. I came up from San Antonio in 20 – well, we started our move in 2019, started getting everything ready. And then right as everything kicked off for the Great Reset, I opened up my shop here, Wise Wolf Gold and Silver. So yeah, it was a transplant from San Antonio. And this is, I came up here based on research because I was researching and doing, I was doing a 5-day a week radio show in San Antonio, and I'd been on radio before, but I'd taken a big layoff. And I don't know, something about the last quarter of 2019, it just, there's something gut level. And, you know, I just think maybe it's just God talking to me or something, you know, just something, some sort of spirit moving me to look into just leaving. And economically, it was really stupid because I had a successful business, and I thought, well, I need to homestead. I need to do something. I got to get out of a major city. So I did. And it's made a world of difference. I'm really glad that I made the move because I really don't even have an address. And my wife, Melissa, runs the homestead, and I run the shop, and we have chickens, and we've got dogs, and I got a cat. I mean, I'm hopefully get some goats and stuff soon or something else. But I think
get sheep, man.
I've heard that. Get sheep, not goats.
Goats are so fun, though. They're so cute and fun.
They stink. They're mean, and they don't stay in the fence. And their milk tastes bad to me. To me, that's personal.
Okay.
Some guy at church gave me some goat milk on Sunday, and I tried it in my coffee. It wasn't good. I don't like it. I gave it to the pigs. They liked it. But I have, I just got two little American guinea hogs. They're 4 months old. They're a good breeding pair. And I'm excited to, they eat a lot. They eat 6 loaves of bread a day.
Wow.
And other than that, I think I have 8 sheep now. I have 3 rams. I have 2 little dairy ewes. So, and I got a dairy ram. So I'm going to be able to breed them and milk them. I'm really excited about that. Yeah, sheep's milk tastes good. And then we have chickens as well. But yeah, we live pretty close to Portland. But it's amazing. An hour northwest of Portland, I guarantee you, it looks a lot more like the Ozark Mountains than it does, you know, a big city. So it's I've never been to the Ozarks. I think it would probably be a fantastic place to live. I'm happy that you guys made it out.
We're always welcome to visit here.
Yeah.
You know, you come see Branson, which has all the shows. You know, it's like Vegas without the
It's like Jesus roll, Vegas, you know? Right?
Yeah, it's but it's, I mean, a lot of great shows and entertainment. It's got that feel to it, and you know, lots to do, like, I mean, nature wise too, you know. And they got the Top of the Rock. It's kind of like this resort deal with Bass Pro and all. It's neat. You guys would have a good time. Plus, you could come see my land.
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, I'm if gas prices ever go down, we want to go on a big road trip this summer, and we just can't afford it. But I'm so happy. Like, I can, from Oregon all the way to like Florida, I have people that I can stay with, you know, homesteads or people with backyard farms and things like that. So, that's cool that I can, add one more to the list now.
Sure.
But, who is the most famous, person ever to come out of the Ozarks?
Famous person out of the Ozarks? That's a good question. Off the top of my
head, Ozarks, there, Missouri. What other states? Do they
Arkansas, Missouri, mostly. I mean, we call this area Moark. You know, I live, my homestead is in Northwest Arkansas and I crossed the border into Missouri. The reason I did that is because Arkansas, at least at the time, charges sales tax on gold and silver bullion. So you can't really, because they charge it, no one's going to have a shop. I mean, because you can't operate. So Missouri had just taken that off of their taxable list. And so I was able to put this shop up and I ran my first TV commercial yesterday. The guy that one of my neighbors here in the shopping center has a tanning salon. And he's like, "Hey, I saw you on TV." Yeah. Like, good. Somebody saw it. The commercial's working. So, yeah. So I cross the border every day. I don't know. I'll think about the most famous people. I know that it's going to be somebody that's so obvious and I just didn't think of it. But did you have anybody? Did you look somebody up before you asked me that?
No, I don't know. Probably some like rhinestone cowboy guy from the 80s, you know, something like that.
Isn't Brad Pitt from Missouri?
Yeah, he's from Missouri. He went to University of Missouri in Columbia when my wife went there. But that's not the Ozark.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'll keep thinking. There's got to be somebody. I mean, it's probably so obvious too. And I'll kick myself.
Yeah. I've got a big giant list of stuff that we want to talk about with you. We want to keep Deborah involved in the conversation because she likes to sit there silently a lot of the time.
Yes, I do. I like to nod and go
Yeah. But Tony, you want to start out by giving us a little bit of your super interesting history?
Just like personal history or history?
Yeah, your military service, all that stuff. Yeah.
Well, sure. I'm from Rockwall, Texas, a little town east of Dallas. And in 99, I joined the military. I joined the U.S. Army and became a paratrooper and a military policeman. I volunteered for my first assignment overseas the day I got to Fort Bragg and went to Kosovo. So I was in Mr. Clinton's war. We bombed Serbia for 78 days.
That might have been Mrs. Clinton's war, actually.
Oh, right. little wag the dog.
Yeah.
And then, of course, came home and they made me the colonel's driver. And I found out all the things I did in powerlifting. I was a competitive powerlifter growing up and was part of the U.S. team. I represented the United States. I set a few world records. And anyway, the Army found out about that and said, "Why don't you drive for the colonel?" So I ended up being colonel's driver for a little while life was good for about 6 months. And then 9/11 happened. And my unit was the first army company on the ground in Kandahar, Afghanistan after 9/11. We got there in calendar year, which in 2001. And then we wrapped that up. I got back stateside and I was part of the invasion of Iraq. And that pretty much carried me 5 years. So I got out in 2004, went back to Texas. Got into several different businesses, real estate, convenience stores, did a lot of different stuff. I ran for Congress in 2013, 2014 there in Texas in the 4th Congressional District. Became really good friends with the sitting congressman. His name was Congressman Ralph Hall. He was the last World War II veteran. And his last race, I ran against him, but then he had a runoff and actually he called me and asked for my help. And so I went to go help him because he was running against John Ratcliffe. Ralph had been my congressman since I was literally 1 year old. So he was there a long time, but he was getting older and he didn't have sophisticated political structure. He was an old throwback guy. Like, you know, he liked to brag. He put Ronald Reagan on hold at one time.
Yeah.
He did. He actually put Ronald Reagan on hold just to do it, to say that he did. He was friends with LBJ. And I talked about him on David Knight today. He was friends with John Connally. And of course, John Connally was the Secretary of the Treasury under Nixon, but he was also riding in the car with Kennedy. He was governor of Texas when Kennedy was murdered in Dallas. And he used to tell me a joke about how every 4 years, John Connally would put that wrist brace back on because the bullet, you know, the magic bullet went through his wrist. And so he wanted to kind of just remind people he was in the car with Kennedy. And so anyway, I had a lot of great talks with Ralph and that was totally worth it to run, but he was beaten by John Ratcliffe, who became the director of national intelligence for Donald Trump. And my political whatever I had in career was over for picking that side, and happy to do it. I'd do it again. I was in radio for a while and I just took a long break. Took like 4.5 years off of speaking anywhere or writing or anything. And I think it was like 2018. I had the opportunity to do a gold and silver shop, and I found the right place to do it. And it was around that time I decided I need to get back on the, I need to speak out. I was, you know, I took some time to reflect and read more and study. And a lot of my opinions had been refined. Not so much that they changed, but I went from the rebel in the conservative movement, what you would call a paleo conservative, which basically says we put tradition over ideology. You know, this is an anti-war stance. We're not for, you know, profit over people. You know, paleo conservatism is all about, you know, keeping ideological warfare, you know, at bay. And I went from that to a proud conspiracy theorist because I finally was able to put some pieces together. Like, why is our reality the way that it is? I don't think this is all an accident. I don't think this is poor judgment. I mean, if you look at like the year 1913, that's not an accident. Like all these things happening at once, where you get the income tax and the 16th Amendment. You know, on Christmas Eve, you get the Federal Reserve Act. You get the 17th Amendment, where there's a direct election of senators, which means bankers are going to pick who your senator is and not your state legislator. And of course, you get the idea of free trade comes out of 1913. That was nothing in our history was reflected in that year. And that year kind of, you know, carries, it's like patient zero for everything that we're seeing now. And so I just crossed the Rubicon of I'm no longer really in the conservative movement. Again, I'm a proud conspiracy analyst. I don't think that history is an accident. Something that, you know, FDR said that if something happens in politics, you can bet it was planned. So I got here from research, and I realized that you do get a mark put on you when you do that. And I was happy to do that. I'm like, I can never run now. I can never do the things. I mean, you can run, you're not going to win. Because you've got the mark, and that's fine. I like what I do. As a matter of fact, I got asked by the Young Republicans of Rockwell. I'm going to be in Dallas next week because I had to go to the trading floor for gold and silver stuff. So I'm driving down there, and then I got asked by the Young Republicans of Rockwell. And I thought, that's funny. I had to get old for the Young Republicans to ask me to speak. And I'm no longer a Republican, which is going to be an interesting back and forth, but I'll teach the young guys a thing or two, something that I've learned. But yeah, I mean, I like what I do now. I've been around some amazing people. I've been a fill-in host on InfoWars many, many times. And my relationship with David Knight, who used to work at InfoWars, I fill in on his show. Wise Wolf allows me to sponsor great programs. I sponsor David Knight. I sponsored Charlie Robinson. We sponsored Tinfoil Hat. We'd proudly sponsor you. I haven't even brought it up. I just now finished, quite frankly, sponsoring him.
Oh, that's a great. Yeah, I used to listen, quite frankly, a lot. I don't listen anymore, but just because I have too much stuff and it's hard. I have a hard time.
Freezing. With that.
Oh, I'm frozen. You guys got me? Yeah, I used to listen to, quite frankly, a lot, but it's hard for me to keep up with shows that have a daily show, you know?
Oh, I know what you mean. I used to have a daily show, and I just can't anymore. There's too much going on in my life, and maybe someday when I have less to do with business, but I've been real fortunate because I am busy, and something this project, Wise Wolf, has been... it's really become my avatar. And now when Billy Ray Valentine introduces me on America Unplugged, he calls me the wisest of all the wolves. And I'll never forget, like, when I came up with that name, like, it was just kind of a, you know, an experiment in marketing. I was like, I want a wolf avatar. And so that's how that happened. I'm like, it's gotta be a sophisticated wolf, a wise wolf, something, you know, that's how it has to rhyme. So, that's really a blessing and something that I'm real proud of.
Yeah. You mentioned David Knight. He was on InfoWars forever, right?
He was on InfoWars a long time. I think he worked there from like 2013 to 2020.
And they kind of had a split over him not wanting to, him having a problem with Alex supporting Donald Trump so heavily?
It wasn't so much that, from what I understand. I think it was the last, well, I think they had a long disagreement over Trump going back to like 2016. And I don't know the ins and outs. I've never really asked, but there was the issue of the Stop the Steal and the watermarks on the ballots for, you know, that Steve Pachinik went on the war room. And
I fell for that one.
We're going to do a sting. And David Knight said, this is not real. And so I think that was the disagreement. And like I used to be over there after I filled in for David so many times. I didn't originally start out filling in for David. I'm friends with Owen Schroyer and Harrison Smith. I came in through just having a radio show, and another one of my good friends, Jason Lowe, has a show over there called Titans of Liberty. So I used to be on, I've been on there many times, but anyway, the good people over there, I try to stay out of that spat, but I end up filling in for David so many times that I'm associated with him, which I'm proud to be. And that's fine. You know, I have positive things to say about InfoWars. I'm not really going to join the camp of, you know, I know Dave, if you listen to David Knight, he'll tell you all you need to know or what he thinks about InfoWars. But I'm definitely in the camp of, you know, I have friends there and I wish them well.
Yeah. Yeah. Billy Ray Valentine.
We still got you, Adam?
Yeah. You guys got me?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Billy Ray's, he's pretty opinionated on what goes on over there too. But, the one thing that I've heard you talk about that David Knight talks about a lot is the fourth turning, and you're a student of history. And that's really, really interesting to me. Can you kind of explain that to Deborah and I?
Yeah, I don't know. That's something I'm not familiar with, the fourth turning.
I'll make this in really simple terms, because a lot of times the reason that people don't like history is because the way it's taught.
Yeah.
You know, and we do this, I think they do this on purpose because, you know, I think Solzhenitsyn, the Soviet dissident, said it best. He said, if you want to destroy a people, you first sever the roots. So they make history boring. Like, here's a date to remember. Here's the death of a king. And, you know, it's just, it's not a story. It's not, there's no life in it. And unfortunately, I educated myself. I was able to do that because being deployed and going to combat, there's no television, there's no radio. So you're separated from, you have to find books. And then I was just able to get books delivered. And I ended up reading like 200 books on history and philosophy and biography when I was in Iraq, because I was there a whole year. I mean, and people knew, I had books stacked up. I mean, anybody was with me at the time. That's everything around me was books. So that was really my education. And again, like I said, I didn't really come to the place I am now until, you know, the last 7 or 8 years, where I was like, I don't read court history anymore. If it's a court historian, I mean, sponsored by a foundation and a major university, I'm probably not going to read your work. And the reason is it's censorship by omission, right? It doesn't make any sense. But The Fourth Turning is a book that came out in the 1990s. There's two authors called Strauss and Howell. And the basic premise of the book is that history goes in cycles, and you can look at it kind of like on a map. You can see the life of a person, which is between 80 and 100 years. The Romans called it a seclorum. So between 80 and 100 years, there's a major upheaval and a turning and a remaking of society. And so if you go 80 years back from where we are now, or where we're heading into, you see the Great Depression and World War II. Major upheaval, financial collapse, 50 million dead, the world turned upside down, all that, you know, the atomic bomb, everything. That's a fourth turning. Before that, you had the American Civil War, the most costliest war in the West in the 19th century. It was very bloody, massive casualties, financial losses, the consolidation of power. It's one thing that you see our history really turning there as well, because it was, you know, the United States are, which means that the United States would agree, or the states were separate and sovereign, and that became one government. The United States is after the Civil War. So that was something that happened in the fourth turning. And of course, 80 years before that, you had the American Revolution. And that's why you hear Lincoln talk about in the Gettysburg Address, four score, which is 80 years and 7 years ago. Four score and 7 years ago.
R to is a really cool way to look at it, man. I've never heard that before.
That's the way they actually, the vernacular, the lexicon, everything changed in that time because it went from the states being sovereign, which they still are. But the federal government consolidated all that power, you know, under Abraham Lincoln, under the North and the industrialized North. And that's where you get that, where we become the strong federal central government that was. But that's all part of a turning. So there's four different turnings inside of each cyclical. So you got four generations. And right now we're at that end game where you have, you know, a massive change ahead, where you have, you know, corrupt leadership. You've got the countries that are eager to go to war with each other. You've got currency wars, trade wars, all of this stuff that's happening. Now, here's something interesting. The elite know this. They have think tanks. They war game all this stuff out. They're planning accordingly. They're not going to get caught flat-footed. I think this has a lot to do with the Hegelian dialectic, and I don't think that the reality we live in today is organic. I think that they have messed with the mechanism.
What's the
Hegelian dialectic?
Well, this goes back. So the 19th century, there was a philosopher in Germany named Friedrich Hegel. And he always paid really close attention to this same kind of thing. Like history would present, society would present a thesis, like an idea of how a society would, the best idea for how a society would work or whatever. And that's capitalism, right? So that's a thesis. And then some other group would come up with an antithesis, like communism, right? And these two things would battle it out, and there become synthesis. So the dialectic, the Hegelian dialectic, is the synthesis of a thesis and an antithesis. So an idea and a counter idea, they battle it out, right? That's the cycle of history according to Hegel. That's why the elites, in my opinion, like we all think of communism and socialism and progressive movements as something that just happens, which they're not. There's something that, because it requires funding, and that's something that never gets brought up by the conservative media. I mean, I even talked to people like Mark Levin, who's a mainline, you know, conservative host, and I asked him, he wrote a book on freedom of the press. And he was talking about the editors and the people in the newspapers and how they had a certain ideology and how it was really, un-American. And I said, yeah, but who owns the things, right? Yeah. Who owns the companies? Who funds the companies? That's what I'm more, I care about that more. Like when, you know, Fox News comes on and somebody starts talking about George Soros, and there was Newt Gingrich, and they said, no, you can't talk about George Soros. He goes, why? He's funding the thing is that's the game. Is not to talk about the entities that make things, that make these movements possible. You're only supposed to talk about the movements. You're not supposed to talk about who funds them.
So this Hegelian dialectic, what we're saying, if I can kind of figure it out, is that it's not organic. The two things fighting against each other are put there. So it just,
yes, I'm that's a long way around me. Yes, I don't believe that what we see right now is something that's sprung up organically. I don't think that the society in turmoil, I think these are funded. I think that we're experiencing intervention, what you would otherwise call conspiracy, by the elites and the most powerful financiers in the world, creating this reality. However, and to get back to explain to Deborah, the people that we study, and the people that we look at in the realms of conspiracy, they're not God Almighty, and they don't create everything. I think they mess with things, but I don't think that they can create, you know, not everything under the sun is due to what the elites are up to. So this cycle of history is real. Like, that's a real thing. I mean, if you go back, and the thing is too, here's something else to consider, guys. Human beings are not trending towards a one world government. We're not doing that. As a matter of fact, if you go back, you know, 500 years ago was the Protestant Reformation, breaking away from the, you know, the unified Catholic Church to Protestantism. And, you know, in 250 years after that, you had the American Revolution.
And before that, we had the schism as well.
Right.
So from Orthodox Church to Catholicism.
It is less human beings right now are not trending towards consolidation. Those are all constructs of the elite. They're trying to do that to us. And so this is interesting how this is all playing out, because the elites want one world government, you know, depopulation, however you want to put it. I mean, they want to control a top-down authoritarian system, you know, one religion, one currency. And I know this because they say it. You know, they have Agenda 2030, Agenda for the 21st Century, the Great Reset. You'll own nothing and you'll be happy. But that's not what people are trending. People are creating cryptocurrencies. People are, you know, creating new ways to work remotely from home and, you know, break away from the 9 to 5. The people are creating new ways to not be part of the smart city pod. You know, people are trying to homestead. There's countries, you know, are in small factions, which is called ethno-nationalism. People are, you know, the Catalonians in Spain, the Hong Kongers, you know, they want to break away. Smaller groups want to break away from the bigger groups. So the consolidation is a construct of the elites. So to not get too bogged down, I think you just look at history. You can find it just by reverse engineering it, Deborah. You go and look and see the major conflicts and major wars all throughout human history have cycles. And now, because of technology, because we're interlinked as a global society in a lot of ways, all of our turnings are linked up. So it wasn't always linked up, and different civilizations had different periods. But now we're more linked up than we've ever been. So I think it's prudent to say that what is on the horizon for us is war. We have war, we have currency wars, we have conflict. And, you know, hopefully, God willing, I'm wrong, because I don't want this. I don't want, I've been a combat veteran, and I find war is nothing more than organized murder. There's no glory in war. There's nothing that society doesn't become better for it. Can you escape history? I think we can, but you first have to be aware of it. So I think we have a lot of, when you see the headlines and you see, like, you know, why are we pushing for a conflict with Ukraine and Russia? Why are we poking that? Why are we trying to do that? We certainly don't want peace. If our leaders wanted peace, they could just have peace. We'd have a conference. We'd say, you know, we'd give up. We had some concessions. We're not doing that. Nancy Pelosi flying to Taiwan. I'm all for Taiwan, but by the way, we gave up Taiwan back in the 70s. We said that we support a one China policy. We're somehow flipping that now. It's bizarro land. So there's something is afoot, and I don't know exactly how to put it, but I am cautioning people to take this seriously when the elites are messing with history right now. They're messing with this, which I believe they understand is what a foreturning is.
Do you think that the...
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Do you think that the constant splintering of society into different smaller and smaller and smaller groups, and people separating and fighting amongst each other as these groups get splinter off more and more and more and more, do you think that is people acting on their own, or do you think that that's all orchestrated as well?
I think that people breaking into smaller and smaller groups is something that I think that's a part of history. I think that's a trend. I think that's been going on for a while. Go back to World War I, and you know, you had Woodrow Wilson in the aftermath with his 14 points and self-determination and all this other stuff, and they started making up countries, you know, like Czechoslovakia, big Poland. You know, they made Poland larger and gave it some German territory and all this stuff. And then, you know, what happens is it starts, like, Yugoslavia is another part of that, you know, after the Second World War. Eventually they break up. There's even a term for it, you know, and I was in the Balkan Wars. It's called Balkanization.
Yeah.
It has to do with, see, countries are not ideas. nations are not notions. What I mean by that is, to be a country, you have to have language, right? You have heroes, you have history, you have terms like blood and soil, whatever you want to call it, but you have a common togetherness. It's like, if you look at the country, like let's pick Japan. In 50 years, Japan will be Japan, right? Mexico will be Mexico. China will be China. Russia will be Russia. What will we be?
Yeah. And if you tell, if you went to a Japanese person and said to them, hey, you know, in 50 years, you guys aren't going to be Japanese anymore. You're going to be, you know, you're going to be Nigerian now. Like, it's acceptable for Japanese people to be like, no, I'm Japanese. I want to stay Japanese. But if you're American, right, and somebody totally comes fine. And says that to you, you're a white supremacist, you know?
Right. That's the weirdest thing. Like, you know, yeah, Joe Biden celebrating. It's like, hey, you know, and I think, and they had it projected in 10 years or so, people of European descent will be a minority. He says, that's great, isn't it? We should, like, celebrate that.
Even if that's true, like, maybe I don't even have a problem with that as an American, but why does that need to be celebrated?
Yeah. But that's the question. Why does it need to be celebrated? I mean, again, what makes a country? It's not an idea. People create constitutions. Constitutions don't create people. Right? The document is an expression of a people, not the other way around.
Right.
And you can see, I mean, if diversity is a strength, then why aren't we strong? I ask these questions all the time. I know I'm supposed to, like, Tucker Carlson, I think, wrote about that in the book Ship of Fools. You're supposed to just rock back and forth and say diversity is our strength. But it's not. I mean, you can celebrate, I mean, I love other cultures, and I'm sorry, we go out. I mean, I want to visit more. I love to visit India. You know, I've been to Mexico. I've been, especially in the Middle East. You know, I'd like to go back when it wasn't in a war zone. But I like where I'm from. I don't know why that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
But apparently it's bad. You know, it's really, really bad. Like, we're the only country that's supposed to like disappearing.
Yeah. Deborah, how do you feel about all that?
Say that again. We're the only country.
We're supposed to like that. We can't have a cohesive culture. We're supposed to like that. That we're disappearing in some way. Like, and Joe Biden, we should celebrate that. It's weird, right?
It seems like that's more divisive than anything else. You know, it's, you know, making people different from each other.
Right. And, you know, I don't know. I can't imagine somebody going into Mexico City and being like, hey, we're going to have a lot of immigration over the next 20 or 30 years. And we just need to celebrate that there's going to be less of you.
Well, I listen to No Agenda twice a week, Tony. That's where I get most of my news from, besides the Atterburn, you know, radio broadcast. And but there was, like, you're talking about Mexico City. There was an NPR story about white immigration to Mexico, how it's ruining the city, how, like, people in Mexico City are really upset that they're going to certain parts of the city and all the menus are in English, all sorts of stuff. And it's like, you guys are so dumb that you can't even see that you're, like, arguing you're arguing about what you're promoting in East LA, you know?
Well, by the way, the Mexican people have every right to keep their culture and their language sacred.
Yeah. I believe the same thing as well.
I mean, I'm all about sovereignty. See, I believe in nations. The Bible does too. You know, the Bible talks about nations. It doesn't talk about one world government. That's a Luciferian thing, you know? And again, nations and sovereignty are important because you got to have somewhere to run to. You know, if everything's controlled by one government, you know, like they say, oh, we'll just have peace. There'll be peace on earth if we just have Klaus Schwab and that, you know, like, we just have some degenerate, you know, moneyed lizard running everything. I don't buy it because, again, the only way that you can guarantee any kind of safety is through nationalism. You know, again, I support countries being sovereign. And it makes me, you know, you talk about American exceptionalism and all this stuff. And that's something I really don't believe in. I think that we have a lot of work to do on ourselves. We don't need to be invading anyone or intervening anywhere. You know, we need to hold up a mirror to ourselves. Somebody asked me the other day, it's like, where's the biggest threat? And I said, right here. It's internal. No outside country threatens us like ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's really important hearing it coming from a guy like you that's, you know, gone places and, you know, done stuff in the name of freedom that, you know, didn't have anything to do with freedom. Right.
Democracy. If people thank me for my service, and I appreciate it, it's very kind, but didn't help. Sorry, didn't help. 2020, you know, I mean, did you find out how much actual freedom you have?
Right.
You know, didn't help.
Yeah. Yeah. So as we're coming to we're at the end of this version of the fourth turning, correct?
Yeah, we're in the last stage of the fourth turning, predicted by Strauss and Howe, ends about 2029.
Okay.
So we're in the last stages where you would find yourself in a war.
Yeah.
Major conflict. I think that they know this, right? It's like they're trying to provoke it.
Yeah.
In some strange way.
Yeah. If you can kind of, Deborah, do you see like how we can like think of stuff like this, then kind of piece together what's going on in the world right now. So what are we're expecting? We're having midterm elections in November. I don't understand. Why did they already happen in Wyoming? Why did Liz Cheney just get voted out there? Do they have theirs earlier?
That was their primary.
Okay. Oh, so that was just a primary. She got primary. Okay. We're expecting to see a massive red wave in the fall. And that's just a result, this giant, massive overcorrection from the pendulum swinging so far the other way. Sorry, guys, my connection's a little rough. The pendulum swinging so far the other way. I got to pause for a second. Hold on. All right, guys, we're back. So I was talking about, the pendulum swinging so far the other way, people getting so upset, you know, with Lola reading books to their children at the library, things like that. And, you know, you guys get the reference?
Yep.
Lola. and just this massive culture war that's in my opinion, been, you know, rigged up. Do you think that correction is something that could lead to someone coming into power who is actually everything that the left says that Donald Trump is, even though he's not that? But do you think that
I get what you're saying. I've often thought about this. It's almost like they want to engineer that.
Yeah.
You know, like they, because I am in no way, shape, or form going to get behind an authoritarian.
Yeah,
but that's what they're creating.
Many people will, though. And it's like, I'm still stuck in this left-right paradigm. I massively want to see the left lose. And I could get, you know, I have to take a step back, and I'm capable of like seeing the flaws in my thinking every once in a while. A lot of people aren't, though, you know, and but I totally understand it. But do you think that there could
be really hard for that?
It would be really hard to what?
It would be really hard for an authoritarian figure of the so-called right to take hold in this country. And the reason I say that is because all institutions, all wings of government, every level is run by leftist globalists.
Yeah.
I mean, they'd have to replace everyone. The FBI, do you think there's a conservative in the FBI anywhere that isn't retired in the last, retired 30 years ago? Is there anybody in the ATF? Is there anybody in the IRS? Is there any, I don't, NSA, CIA, they're all woke. I don't see any, even the military, I see no evidence of this. You know, you go back to films like Dr. Strangelove, where they got all these wacko cold warriors like Jack D. Ripper, you know, that caricature that Stanley Kubrick makes of the right and, you know, crazy, willing to start World War III to kill the commies. Those people don't exist. I see no evidence anywhere. So I don't think you have to worry too much. I mean, Trump was elected, and I was a big Trump supporter. Not anymore, but I was. And, you know, he just didn't, there was no way to carry out policy. Well, that and a little bit is on him for that, because he just hired everybody that didn't vote for him. So he hired no one that voted for him or helped him. He only hired globalists. So I don't think that you'd have to worry about that. I'm more concerned that they make it so bad that almost like we're absorbed into something else, like, and maybe that's what they want, you know, where there comes a UN force or something to oversee us and to keep us from breaking up, you know, like you see. And that would be in the aftermath of an economic collapse.
Yeah.
You know, the run on the dollar, which is very possible.
Yeah.
If you know anything about currency. So I don't know. I just don't see the Republicans can take power all they want. Power, whatever that means anymore. Like I saw a Congresswoman Lauren Boebert, and she tweeted out a couple of days ago. She's like, don't worry.
Don Jeffrey's new best friend.
Lauren Boebert, she's Colorado, and she was like, don't worry, when the Republicans get into power, we won't hire those 87,000 new IRS agents. And I thought, you won't have any say on that.
Yeah.
You know, you just won't. And it used to. Congress has abdicated so much of its power that it really doesn't know who it is anymore, like, or what it's supposed to do. I mean, Congress is supposed to have the purse strings. That was the promise after Vietnam, is that Vietnam could never happen again because Congress would never fund it. But they do.
Yeah.
Massively. So I don't know. I'm not sure that the two-party system can fix the problems. And I don't know how a third party comes in and gets on the ballot. I mean, the only chance at freedom that we have now is local level stuff. You know, that's who your sheriff is, who your mayor is, who your state legislator is. You just get to know those people. Washington is so broken. And I don't know. I hate being a killjoy on that. I just don't know. I don't know how it gets fixed. I mean, even if you have a great, you know, populist leader, they'll have to fire everybody. How would they run Washington? They can't carry out policy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a weird one to think about, but I think that there is, I think you need to scout out where you want to live. And I think there's hope to go and live. I'm sure, like, on a day-to-day basis, I mean, we're looking into some pretty dark stuff, but we both live in places where it's probably just kind of normal right now. You know, is that the feeling that you get?
That's just kind of normal. And I'll give you a good example. I mean, history's full of these examples of people enduring and overcoming hardship. I mean, what's the latest from the Soviet Union? You know, I mean, again, this is a rhetorical question, but, you know, we're the same age. You know, in 1979, it was the mighty Soviet Empire. It was unstoppable. Nobody would have ever thought that it would just disappear.
Yeah. It
literally just disappeared and broke into 16 pieces in 1990. So, again, you know, were the Russian people, did they disappear? No, they're still Russians. You know, they have a different government now. They have a different outlook. They have a different way of life. They got out of the yoke of the top-down banker-controlled, because the Soviet Union was banker-controlled. You know, it was a proto-globalist government, and it disappeared. So I would just say, you know, the government is not us, right? Just the government is not the people. Those two things have become untethered.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if the government goes away or something happens, we'll still be Americans. We'll still be homesteaders. We'll still be, you know, who we are. I don't want that, by the way. Because that's going to hurt a lot of people.
Yeah.
Especially people that are, you know, relying on government programs and all sorts of other stuff. But I mean, guys, in the year 2000, the total debt of the United States was $5 trillion. Okay. It took us from 1776 to the year 2000 to hit $5 trillion. It's $30 trillion. Jesus. So you see what I'm saying? The acceleration of corruption is so vast. You know, most people throw around a trillion And I remember reading Jim Mars had a book called The Trillion Dollar Conspiracy. And I never forget this because it just boggles the mind. But, you know, if you take a trillion, by the way, you can't print $1 trillion because there's not enough paper. But if you, it is literally not. So if you could print $1 trillion bills and just put them end to end, they would reach to the sun. They would go 93 million miles. If you tore them in half, they come back. I mean, you could have a complete circle back.
What's the number of years for a trillion if each dollar is a second?
Oh my, it's like 30,000 years.
Because I know, because we've done this recently. So a million's 11 days, a billion's 31 years or something like that. Yeah. And then a trillion is
30,000 or something.
Yeah. And it's these words just get thrown around and people don't even know what it means anymore.
Yeah. You can't conceptualize. You can't wrap your head around it at all. Yeah. So how do we put the brakes on all of this?
Well, I don't think we do.
A lot of this stuff is just personal decisions about how to protect yourself. And, you know, there's some good ideas about homesteading and networking about, you know, like-minded people and raising your own, getting into organic farming, whatever you can, even if you can't do that, just, you know, finding people who do, getting involved in something on some level, whether it's podcasting or writing or just speaking the truth. You know, I think a lot of times just having a presence that says I'm a free individual, that I'm sovereign and that I want to also protect free speech and other people's rights to exist. I don't know. There's something psychically, I think, carries the weight, just being and acting that in it. I think other people are attracted to that as well. I mean, again, I said in the, you know, earlier in the show, the people that are ruining our lives, that are creating this great reset, new world order stuff, that are getting, you know, that should be negotiating peace, that are trying to get us into wars, they're not God Almighty. They're not omnipotent. They're just people that are corrupt, that don't have a conscience. So I think there's a lot of opportunity here too. I think there's a lot of opportunity around the corner. I don't think it's all just bleak. Yeah. But we need to understand that the path that we're on is a very perilous one, if I can put it that way.
The most black-pilled people I know are people that are refusing to leave the cities, that still live in a city, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's bleak out there, and I have good days and bad days, Tony, but most of the days I'm out here on my farm, driving my tractor, feeding my animals, you know, and just living. And even if it is, you know, coming to an end, like I'm having a good time and doing what I have wanted to do for the past 10 years. I got out here and I'm just doing it. And all we got to do, like all we can do at people that have our status level, is just keep living and try to treat people well, you know, like we're getting the word out there as well as we can. You have a much bigger platform than I do, but I mean, it's just like talk therapy for me to be able to talk it out and talk with Deborah. I have a fantastic relationship with Deborah now, but it's just, you just got to live your life, Deborah. It's just, you know, you have stuff that you like to do. You just got to keep living your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. It's, you know, I look at where I am in my life, which is where I thought I wanted to be, you know, and it's not that I don't want to be where I am, but there's so much more that I could be doing. Or
and you know, that's a big fear for everybody probably, is to be coming to the end. And you're not quite at the end yet, but you're, you know, three quarters of the way there probably. And to die with regrets, you know, that's a big fear.
It's a terrible thing.
Well, we've been talking about this geopolitical stuff for long enough. And I know that you, since we're about the same age, I think you've been involved in, you know, this kind of stuff for longer than I have, Tony, but I like the fact that you have an affinity for a lot of the old 90s conspiracy stuff. And I think that stuff's so fun to look at and look back at all the, what all the old timers were looking at in the Bill Cooper days, the Hour of the Times and AM Freedom Radio and all that stuff like that. I've written a couple things down here, and I wanted to get your thoughts on those guys. I know you're going to do a big show on Black Helicopters Over America soon, right?
Yeah, with Chris Graves.
Do you want me to leave that one out because you've got the show coming up, or can you give us some thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, Chris has researched this, and this was based on and I forget the author. My dad had a copy of the book back.
I've got it out in my shop right now.
And I remember as a kid, so after Ruby Ridge and Waco, my father, who was an entrepreneur and still is an entrepreneur, but he had convenience stores. He had his own bank. I mean, he was a real go. I mean, he started working when he was 12 years old. So he built himself up from the ground up and, always concerned about, freedom and the Constitution. And he really didn't get into anything, in the patriot type movement until the mid-90s after Waco and after the Brady Bill and after the assault weapons ban. And so we started, he would take me, I was like 14 at the time, and he took me to see Lieutenant Colonel Bo Greitz speak.
Yeah.
And anybody knows anything about Bo Greitz, he was, part of the radio patriot wars, of the time they had, Bill Cooper, G. Gordon Liddy, all these guys, what's the other guy's name? Valentine. They had so many different, not Billy Ray, but another Valentine. And they had so many of these shortwave hosts and patriot hosts. And Bo Greitz was one of them. He was the most highly decorated Green Beret in Vietnam. And they based the character Rambo off of him because he was trying to go back into Vietnam and rescue POWs that the government said didn't exist, and that's where he found out that the CIA was running opium through Laos and all this other stuff. Like they were funding their projects and he brought all the evidence to the White House and they wouldn't look at it, get it out of here. Ross Perot intervened and was like trying to show them the stuff too. And they wouldn't look at it anyway. So I read his book and got to meet Colonel Greitz and he would go on, Bo Greitz would go do broadcasts with a young Alex Jones. And
he's the one that went to Ruby Ridge, went up and negotiated for Randy Weaver to come out.
Oh, you froze.
Oh,
he went to Ruby Ridge.
Bo Greitz went to Ruby Ridge and negotiated. Yeah, it's okay.
You're back.
You're back. Bo Greitz went to Ruby Ridge and with Randy Weaver, and after Lon Horucci had blown off his wife's head while he's holding their baby. I mean, the FBI just murdered these people and his son too. And of course, by the way, just a fun fact, Bill Barr, the attorney general that QAnon said was going to, really do a number on the elites, was the attorney and character witness for Lon Horucci, who shot Vicky Weaver in the head.
Yeah. And he's also he's also the son of the guy that hired Jeffrey Epstein at high up
scale. The Epstein-Barr virus, right? Epstein-Barr virus.
That's a good one.
But yeah, I mean, so I got to see this at an early age and would listen to these old school guys on the radio and, but look, life catches up and I started powerlifting and doing stuff as a young man. And I said, I'm going to join the Army. I want to be a paratrooper. I want to go to Fort Bragg. I want to do all this stuff. So my introduction into history and foreign policy was actually living it. And, I don't know. I don't think I would be doing the things I'm doing now had I not had that shock to the system, after my tours and being part of those type of units and seeing the things that I've seen. And then you take the history knowledge, take it the background, and it just fits me like a glove, because the thing is, I realize I could have a bigger audience. I've been broadcasting long enough. I figured it out. I mean, I can broadcast, but the thing is to get a bigger audience in this setting. I think a lot of times you have to say things that are for effect. And I kind of know what to say, like I lost a lot of my listening audience and I'm on WWCR, home station of Bill Cooper. I did that on purpose. I read his biography and I'm like, I'm going to get on WWCR too. So I got a couple hours there a week.
Was that Pale Horse Rider by Mark Jacobson?
Yes. Great book.
Yeah. We had him on the show.
Oh, you did? Oh, yeah. I'd love to have him on. That's a fantastic book.
Yeah, we both, Deborah and I both read it.
Went out to, I went out to Bill Cooper's home, and I did a broadcast from his driveway on the anniversary of his 20th anniversary of his being murdered by the police. And I got Don, I was on with Don Jeffries.
Yeah.
It's kind of a surreal, I have to send you a clip. It's kind of a surreal thing. We, my friend, Mr. Anderson and I drove all the way out there and made the pilgrimage, and actually visited his gravesite. And I put an 1879 silver dollar near his grave, just as a gift from all of us. And thank you for everything that he did. But yeah, just going to go back to my broadcast. Yeah, I lost a lot of listeners in 2020 because I said what was going to happen on the election, and they didn't like it. And I don't know if some of them came back or not, but the cult around Trump, like, I'm sorry, I'm just calling the shots. I'm just saying this is what I think is going to happen. And I lost so many, and I don't, you know, he's still that way. I don't know. I've never seen anything quite like it.
Yeah.
With the Trump deal. But I just continue to do what I do. I mean, I'm happy doing what I do because I'm one of those great people. I get to go on great shows like this. To me, it's about the ideas. You know, I'll never abandon talking about the great ideas, and I don't want to censor myself, and I don't want to, you know, this, I like to be able to explore and be, versatile, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, it's good stuff. So black helicopters, how about deep underground military bases?
Totally real. I think it was Catherine Austin Fitz who originally was, she worked in the accounting off through George H.W. Bush's administration, where they were, you know, there's that $2.3 trillion they can't track at the Pentagon, all that stuff. I think that they have massive... Yeah, so Donald Trump,
he was looking for it in the wreckage the next morning.
It's right over there in the accounting office. Well, I'll meet you over there tomorrow at 11.
Yeah.
how about 9/11 tomorrow?
Yeah.
So I think that those are totally real. Whether Phil Snyder ran into extraterrestrials, and
that's the guy. So Deborah, there's this guy Phil Snyder, and he was military intelligence.
Supposedly it's really, he's a really mixed, Chris talked about him on the 1979 show, and in conspiracy lore, Phil Snyder is a weird mixed bag. He was found dead, you know, like he was
close in Westland, Oregon, which was right down the road from where I used to live. Yeah.
And I, and for the listening audience, I put it committed suicide in quotations, but he was found dead, but he supposedly in 1979 had some, you know, he was doing a engineering and stuff for the government, and then they got into some battle with extraterrestrials who also
he took some elevator down, like on not Stripes but Spies Like Us. It goes down right to the middle of the earth, and he had a gun battle with gray aliens. I think he got shot with a laser gun, and it like disabled him,
right? He would show that off. I mean, it's a weird story. I mean, in today's world, who knows anymore? I mean, I like to keep an open mind. I think Jim Mars said it best. He says the mind's like a parachute. It works best when it's open. But I think there's a caveat to that. Don't make sure that your mind's not so open that your brain falls out.
Yeah. So make sure you don't become a Scientologist too, like Jim Mars.
Like Jim Mars.
Yeah.
I just heard this recently.
I heard John Brisson said it.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, well, yeah. John told me, I guess recently to me is when John told me a year or so ago.
Yeah, I just heard it a couple of weeks ago too. So there's that, there's Dumbs. And then, we talked about Bill Cooper. After, did you have Bill Cooper up on a pedestal before you read Pale Horse Rider?
Not as much. I'd heard about him, but I'd never... didn't look into his, I always knew about Behold a Pale Horse, and you know, it's this guy Bill Cooper, and he died, I mean, the sheriff's department came out to his house. But then I was I remember the time it was listening to Don Jeffries' work, and this is kind of weird about my life, like I was listening to Don Jeffries and like Hidden History and Crimes and Cover-Ups before I ever met Don Jeffries. And then I followed Don over to Truth Frequency Radio because I was like, oh, that's a cool station, I'm gonna listen to Don Jeffries. And so I started writing Truth Frequency. I said, hey, I'm on the radio in San Antonio here. Would you like another host? You know, I mean, what does it take to get on here? And then they didn't write me back for months. And then finally, like right before I moved, I got an email back and they said, oh, we'd love to have you. What do you want to do? I said, I'll do a daily show. They said, great. We'll put you on right here. And I was right before Don Jeffries. I'd never talked to him.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'd found this stuff out about Bill Cooper through reading Don Jeffries' work. And then that led me to some older episodes. And I'd heard of Bill Cooper, but I didn't look into him the way I should have. And then I started listening to old Hour of the Times and of course, Mark Jacobson's book. And when I hear that intro to the book, I thought, this is what I'm supposed to be reading. Like that's my type of radio man, you know, like the style, you know, the intellect, the subject matter, you know, the integrity. It's that to me, Bill Cooper is something to, he's a model that we should look to, as a broadcaster. Like you want to have that same folksy, sound and that same way to communicate the smoothness of it. Whether you ever get there, I don't know, but that's something I aspire to.
Yeah. It's, I have that whole archive, like downloaded like every show or something like that. I got to get back into it. It's pretty cool. What turned me off when I read that, you know, I had him up on a pedestal. I'd never really gone through, Behold a Pale Horse very much. I mean, it's kind of a hard book to read, but, in that book, it kind of debunks a lot of his UFO stuff and shows that he was like provably lying about some of it. I'm not a big UFO believer in the first place, but yeah, I loved that book. I did think that he kind of downplayed the assassination at the end. What did you think about that part?
I thought so too. I thought that it was weird that the original date that they had planned to come raid his house was 9/11.
Yeah.
And they backed down because he was on the air.
Yeah.
Right.
And that, when was it? 2004?
2001.
So it was,
the day of 9/11.
Oh, wow. 9/11. And he'd predicted it in what? July?
June. Yeah.
Yeah.
June of 2001, you know, telling him it's going to be Osama bin Laden and it's going to be a major attack. And if you believe it's Osama bin Laden, you're one of the dumbest people who ever lived.
Yeah.
he was just calling the shots, you know?
Yeah.
There wasn't anybody like Bill Cooper before or since. And yeah, he had his problems. He had his demons. He was a Vietnam vet. And,
he was on a riverboat, like apocalypse now shit. Like that's got to do some stuff to your brain, you know?
It does. I mean, you get rewired in some way. You know, you see it, if you're vigilant enough for a long period of time, you're just never going to be a normal human being. You can do good stuff. But if you're vigilant enough over a long period of time, you're just not going to be like a normal person. And Bill Cooper wasn't normal. He started to see things that I think other people couldn't see. And, you know, I think I have been fortunate enough some in my life to kind of see trends. I'm not a prophet. I'm not that smart. And like I said earlier, you know, when I think, you know, about my moving up here, you know, saying God's talking to me, I don't hear that. Obviously I'm talking about just in the sense of the spirit, like you feel like a gut level thing to do something different. And I've just learned to listen to that voice when I have it and just be thankful that I did listen, you know, and have some gratitude.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that thought that it, you know, what do you think about, is this a spiritual battle?
Yes.
Yeah.
100%. And that's the good news.
Yeah.
Is that all this isn't an accident, that you're not an accident, that this is not meaningless, that we're not just on spaceship Earth floating through nothingness, that, you know, the Big Bang, that there's things that came out of nothing and made an explosion. And then all of a sudden, you know, there's, you know, talking apes with pants on. I just, and nuclear weapons. I just don't think that's the case. I think there's a meaning to things. And maybe it's as simple as, I've just started lately. I swear I wake up and I look at the headlines and I'll even be in the middle of a broadcast, guys. And I go, is this real? Like,
yeah,
this is so bizarre. Like everything seems like my life was spliced at some point. This doesn't seem real. But I have to accept that it is, you know, because I still feel love. I have my dogs, you know, like those are real. You guys are real. But what I'm saying is that reality is so bizarre that it does make you question it. Like the actors, the everything that is this play that we're seeing carried out. And it's like, well, if this is a spiritual battle, which I believe it is, it's like, is it just this, is all this a test? Like we're supposed to see who takes the money and like sells out other people or starts wars or, you know, succumbs to violence or has, you know, a complete loss of character. Like, what is this all about at the end of the day? You know, because it seems like the worst people just have the best luck. You notice that?
Yeah.
Like there's the worst people, like, just constantly like, you know, maniacal, you know, like, let's buy up all the farmland. If we do a really good job with vaccines, you know, it's like, but you know, they live forever. And like Henry Kissinger's like 185 years old. And it's like, what? And Prince Philip, you know, wanted to be reincarnated as a
virus,
a deadly virus, you know, and he just lives, he lives to be, you know, Methuselah. I just, you know, I don't know. It's a weird reality. And I was thinking today, you have the, was it the guy Harari, the you?
Oh, Noah Yuval Harari. Yeah,
just the guy out of Israel. And he's like, we just got to get rid of all these useless people. You know, he's the advisor for the World Economic Forum. So we can, basically, we're going to splice our consciousnesses with AI so we can live forever. And I go, you know, guys, I mean, no offense, but why are you trying to live forever? This is a waking nightmare. Like, yeah. I'm just trying to get through it with integrity and dignity and like plant trees. And I mean, I don't want to live for, I mean, I want to have a nice life. You know, I'm not trying to get, I don't want to go back into combat and die for no reason. And I definitely, you know, I don't want to be a martyr or anything, but good Lord, like, what is the goal of living forever? This is every day I wake up and go, just see another tragedy, another, you know, senseless act of violence, governments, you know, it just, I don't know, man. It just, the elites are insane. They're sociopaths. They only care about themselves. And,
yeah.
We're just over here trying to have a garden and, you know, please leave us alone. I don't want anything, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Last night, you know, my wife and I, we just put, we live in this 100-year-old farmhouse, Tony. It's in rough shape when we got out here. It's still in pretty rough shape, but it's a lot. And Deborah saw it when we moved in.
Yeah, it was rough.
We bought it from some like tweaker bikers, you know. And that's, I mean, it's a good thing that they were tweaker bikers because that's the only reason we were able to afford it. But we just put in a whole HVAC system. So it's like I've got AC blowing right now. It's 70 degrees in my house, 90 degrees outside. So it's really nice. But we blew all the, there's no money left. There's nothing left. And my wife and I were talking last night. We're just like, you know, like we're consumers, you know, consumerism is just another way to call our society selfish. It's consumerism and selfishness. And I know that when I've been the happiest in life, it's when I'm doing things for other people. We kind of talked about last night, like what we could do to kind of try to save some money and not spend all our money, all our time looking on Instagram and getting ads pumped into our heads and watching TV and stuff like that. And I was just like, what's a couple of things that make us happy? And I came up, for me, what I came up with was like eating and cooking good food and doing small projects around my homestead and in my house and finishing them and seeing the results. Like, that's what makes me happy. I've got enough building supplies here at my place to do a whole bunch of projects without having to buy anything. And I think just, it's so weird because, you know, I grew up in a family that was not religious. I went to, I think, Presbyterian church for a little while with my parents just because it was the 80s and that's what you were supposed to do where they lived. And then I went to public school that was really bad by my house. So my parents put me in Catholic school in third grade. They got me, they weren't Catholic, but they made me get baptized Catholic so I'd fit in better. I continued going to like Catholic church on and off, you know, until they made me get confirmed, which is when you become an adult in the Catholic church. At 17, I got confirmed. And that's when you get to like, say, like, I don't want to, you get to choose what you want to do in the church. I never went back. I was 17. I'm almost 43. And yeah. And then just over the past year and a half, the deeper I get into conspiracies and the real history. I have a history degree from college, by the way, too. So like, it's not the, and then I had to realize that that's not the real history, but you know, within the past few months, I started going to Christian church again, and it's weird, you know, and it's, I think that's where the truth is. And it's just so strange that that's come around back again in my life. And it's, you know, it's so nice going to church on Sundays, because like there's all this stuff going around and everybody's talking about overpopulation and not having kids and just doing all this stuff. And then you just go there and it's just normal families that have a bunch of kids. There's kids running around. There's no Sunday school at the church I go to. The kids just like run around the church, and like it's just expected. It's so cool. And I'm just seeing people that are like normal. And you know, I know deep down inside they're fed up with and I go to the kind of church that barely anybody grew up in. Unless you're a Russian person who immigrated here, you probably didn't grow up in the church that I go to. And it's all people that found it on their own, you know, and it's people looking for the truth. And it's just so strange that just popped into my head, you know, one day that I should go do that. But yeah, I don't know what that big long rant was about, but
brings Deborah, you joy. It brings you joy. That's what it's about.
In these trying times, Deborah, what brings you joy?
Well, on a day-to-day, my dog.
Yeah.
Being outside with my dog, you know, taking a hike, working in my yard, listening to music.
Yeah.
Those are the things that bring me the most joy.
What about your daughters and your son-in-law?
Well, my daughters and my son-in-law, I don't get to see them on a day-to-day, but yeah, I mean, you guys are the most important things in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Tony, what brings you joy?
Oh, well, certainly I've got my dog Beans, Beans the Brave. I'll see if I can get her on camera, and we're hanging out at the office tonight, but, you know, family, homestead, you know, my wife, Melissa, does a magnificent job with all of that. And I told her the day, if it wasn't for her, it would just be like me with like a trailer there. Like it would just be like a little camper, and maybe I'd have a little tiny, you know, storage thing. It wouldn't be this elaborate thing that she's able to do with the, I mean, we had portable buildings brought in and just finished them all out. And I really think, as far as joy is concerned, like something that I'm so grateful for is the ability or the opportunity to strive for what the Greeks called arete. And what arete is excellence. Like you're talking about, what can you do with what you have, right? And I've always respected somebody who found mastery in something and then was able to take that and whatever their hands found, they just did the best they could with it and became a master with it. And the Greeks call it arete. It's almost just, it's just a level of excellence that you that lives through you. And that's what I try to do with my precious metals business, my broadcasting, and then just working on myself. And I'm a huge work in progress because again, you know, I, if you listen to me on air, you know me. I mean, really, I don't, there's not much you don't know if you've listened to me on air, but I tell people my flaws and things I'm working on. But I definitely want to, you know, the life that I live, I want it to be one of excellence. And if anything brings me joy, it's creating something. That's the thing, is like the ruling elite, the people that we speak out against, they want to kill that. They want to kill your ability to self-actualize and make something. You know, people like to make something because, you know, why we're created in the image of God. And what did God do? God made things. Right? He created things. He didn't just sit in a pod and eat government rations, you know.
Yeah.
He made stuff. That's what humans are supposed to find something to do and to be excellent at. You're not supposed to be on you know, universal basic income as a drone, and just that's not the goal. Is what is there's a great speaker named Jim Rohn, and he said that the wage that you start with is a ladder. It's not a bed. You don't just lay in it. You don't just get the minimum wage and just lay down, you know, like that's it. I'm good. I got the, I'm happy with that. You climb the ladder, you excel. I think that's human nature. That's why communism doesn't work, as people try to break out. It's human nature eventually to try to create something. So I guess, and that's a long way of me saying that I'm thankful that I have the opportunity to create, because I haven't always had that. And so I'm very careful with this gift that I have, being able to do what I do now. And so I don't get arrogant or overconfident. And I think too, the thing about my precious metals business, I've really busy lately, and I'm thinking, I think God just like allowed me to do this because I'm like a Tolkien character, and I'm not bragging on myself, but it's like the ring, you know, in Lord of the Rings, certain people couldn't possess it. And like wealth to me is I have this giant bag of, look, I brought this on for Deborah. I was going to show, this is a bag of 90% silver coins.
Wow.
It's probably like $5,000 worth of stuff there.
Just out of curiosity, what years were they minted?
Anything before 1965. Those are dimes, half dollars, quarters, dollars.
I got a bunch of dimes.
You know, and so I'm just dealing with, I brought on some other props, you know, for Deborah. Like this is a $20 gold piece from 1896.
Wow.
And that was what $20 was for the first 150 years of our history.
It actually represented what it is.
Yeah. Before we go, I'll explain that to you. This is a silver dollar from 1921. This is called a Morgan silver dollar. And that was what a dollar was. So, you know, I think I'm just in the right place at the right time. And so I'm grateful for that. And I think because I'm just interested in it and not worshiping it, you have to like the people that can be bought. That's a weird thing that you can be bought. I find that odd.
Yeah.
There are people like we can't put ourselves in that position, but that history is full of those examples of people that just sold their souls. And so I'm glad that I can be around all this stuff and it doesn't do anything. I just try to get it to customers. I think it's neat. I think I love the history of it. I'm fascinated by it, but not love it, you know? And I definitely wouldn't change my beliefs or change what I do because I needed more of it. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Good message.
Well, I think we've kept you long enough, Tony. This has been a really cool talk. I'll ask you one prediction. Don Jeffries wouldn't give us any predictions last week when we were talking to him.
He doesn't like
based on what recently happened in Wyoming with Miss Piggy, is there any hope for bringing the old guy out of retirement and getting a Cheney 2024 presidential run?
One would only hope so. And you would hope that they would both go hunting together. And both go pheasant hunting together, on opposite sides. I don't know. Dick Cheney, you have to wonder, like, and again, that's one of those examples of people like he's gone through like what, like four different hearts. And,
yeah. He's like living with a pig heart or something like that.
He just keeps on going.
I saw a picture of him on Twitter the other day and he's, whew, it's that you get these old guys, they just start looking like turtles. He looked like a tortoise. It's really strange.
Did you see the ads he did for his daughter's campaign?
No, I'll have to look those up on. Yeah. Did you like them?
No.
Yeah,
I was surprised though that to hear that coming out of his mouth. I mean, he was so anti-Trump.
Well, he used to be really pro-Trump till he wasn't.
Oh, really? Know?
And that the whole thing with Trump, it's like, is this real? Like, you know, all these people that supposedly support him or don't. And it's a really weird thing.
Yeah.
But you know, what's funny about the neocon power structure is that they rule no matter who is elected. They seem to rule. And it's interesting. I thought that they were finished, but they just survive. They It's like,
cockroaches, man.
Right. It's just after, I mean, it'll be in a nuclear holocaust. It'll just be IRS agents and neocons that are still around trying.
And that wasn't an anti-Semitic remark, Deborah.
No, that's an old throwback to the only thing that survives a nuclear blast would be cockroaches. And so that we're putting an addendum, I think, neocons and IRS agents for sure. But before I go, so I brought these on, Deborah. We'll leave you with this, okay? I wanted, you know, for you to look at money a little differently, okay?
Okay.
All right. So this is a $20 gold piece, right?
Okay.
All right. Mm-hmm. So this is what $20 was from 1789, and I'm just generalizing here, to about 1933. 1933, Franklin Roosevelt said, you can't own gold anymore. Turn in your gold coins, and we'll give you these certificates from the Federal Reserve. And they gave people $20. And then the next week, after it was all said and done, Franklin Roosevelt started moving up the gold price. And over time, the dollar being untethered from gold, the money supply increases. So there's no oversight, especially, and you lived through this, is 1971, Nixon completely took us off the gold. We were $35 an ounce for gold, right? So this would have been right around $35 worth of gold, okay?
In 1971?
In 1971, this would have been worth, in meltable gold, just under $35, okay? It's worth over $2,000 right now. Now, does that mean that gold just is so much more valuable? Like a lot of people look at it, I can't believe gold's up that much. No, it doesn't. This coin buys about the same amount of groceries, land, clothes, a car, whatever it did 100 years ago as it does today. The difference is that they took the money supply and they uncoupled it from gold so they can make it at will.
Right.
And since there's no oversight, that's the reason we have such problems that we do. You can't fix anything until you fix the currency, because they just cover up everything. A war here, a mistake there, an open border, a government welfare program, whatever it is. That's how they can lose trillions of dollars, right? When you have a gold and silver standard, you have to account somewhat. That's why they took us off the gold standard. Nixon did in 71. We didn't have the gold anymore, and the foreign countries knew that we didn't. So they started going to the gold window and turning in their dollars for gold. So they stopped it. They closed the window. So whenever you look at a dollar, first of all, it's not a dollar. It's a Federal Reserve note and completely run by the Federal Reserve. Fiat means by decree. So this is a decree by the government that this is worth something. But there is no record in all of history of a fiat currency surviving.
Yeah.
They always go to zero. So in your lifetime, the dollar's devalued massively. You know, again, we talk about the 70s, the year I was born, right? The year that Adam was born, gold went to $600 an ounce from $35 an ounce in 1971. And that's not because gold went up. It's because the dollar devalued. And that's when they had the massive inflation and all the rest. So this is coming again. There's going to be a currency reset. So the more that you can understand this, the better off you're going to be. You don't save dollars, you save assets. You trade out those green pieces of paper as soon as you can into an asset. I'm not telling you to go buy gold and silver. I'm just telling you that you don't save those green pieces of paper. You might want to have some cash around for an emergency, but those digits and the green pieces of paper, yeah, the
zeros and ones,
and bankster notes, they are in constant downfall of value. And 80% of all the dollars ever made in the history of our country were made in the last 36 months. Huh? So just a little bit of history of my, when kids come in the shop and they got their parents and they're like, we were interested in buying silver. And I give this little speech to kids and make them hold a gold coin. I'm like, here's $5. And they're like, that's $5. It's, you know, and that's like an Indian head $5 gold piece. And I'm like, well, it was $5. And then these people called banksters took our dollar away from it and made it into nothing, you know? And they're like, wow. And so I just tell them all about how, you know, if you pay attention, the magic trick that is the Federal Reserve and the banking system, it's behind everything. It's behind all the problems that we have. If you take that away, we can solve a lot, but you got to solve that first. And I think that we will eventually.
Is there any other nation that just prints money like we do?
All of them do. Okay. Yeah. All of them do. And some you know, like Zimbabwe can't really get away with it because they don't have a giant military like we do. And they didn't have the petrodollar. See, we figured out after we went off the gold standard, well, we'll just we'll make it to where the Saudis and all these other nations, the only way to convert to buy oil is to convert it from dollars. So it was called the petrodollar. And that's waning. You know, and we just put sanctions on Russia and said, oh, well, you can't sell oil. And the Russians said, well, okay, then we just don't accept dollars anymore.
Yeah, you got to buy it in
rubles or rubles. Gold.
And now the ruble's up higher than it's been in a long time, right?
Correct.
Maybe ever.
Right. The BRICS nations, which is Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, they're going to create their own gold-backed currency. This is, the dollar is, I've said this before, it's on hospice. So we need to be aware of that that's coming. There's going to be a big shift. And I don't think the dollar is going to zero. I think the dollar is going to digital. And this is why physical metals and other things, there's people need to learn about them, because that's a way for you and I to transact business away from some centralized control nightmare thing. Yeah. I love Bitcoin. I wear my Bitcoin shirt. I love Bitcoin. But Bitcoin is not what, you know, the central bank digital currencies that you hear about, the CBDCs. That's a nightmare thing. We got to oppose that. But that's definitely where the dollar's headed. So I just wanted to go over that before we close the show, because I thought we were kind of going to open up with that, and then we ended up talking about geopolitics. So I hope it was, but I was trying to break stuff down. I wanted to not get into too wonky or anything on our talk. I wanted to make sure I was, because I think history, sometimes if you're talking history, especially stuff like the fourth turning, you turn people off because you're like, well, I don't know what you mean by that. And so I hope it was.
Well, you did break it down, and you helped me to understand a lot about it.
Well, I'm glad.
More than I did.
This is absolutely fantastic, Tony. I'm really glad we got to do this. It's a lot of fun. And some serious stuff, but I don't know. I'm glad that we talked about it the way we did. And I think we're just going to keep living. People like you and I are going to make it. So
always.
You want to tell everybody about all your stuff?
All my stuff. Well, you can find me at arterburn.news. That's my website. And all my podcasts are up on that channel, arterburn.news. Anywhere podcasts are found, the Arterburn radio transmission. And of course, that's Paratruther is also one of my channels, but you can find everything on arterburn.news. I have a show called America Unplugged with the great Billy Ray Valentine and the legendary Don Jeffries, author of Hidden History, every Saturday on Rockfin. And the Wise Wolf Gold and Crypto Show. I have a show on gold and cryptocurrencies on Saturdays, 3 p.m. Central Time on Rockfin as well. And I'm the owner of Wise Wolf Gold and Silver. I think that's all the plugs I have for now. WiseWolfGoldAndSilver.com. We ship nationwide. If you want to talk to me about precious metals, you can talk to me. Go to the website.
Fantastic. Yeah. And then when freeworld.fm gets going, you'll be over there as well, right?
I'll be on Free World. I'll keep talking in the free world, my friend.
Sounds great. Well, Tony, this has been fantastic. And we'd love to talk to you again. Maybe we can pick out one of those specific 90s topics and get real deep into it.
And he'd love to talk to you guys. You guys got a great show. And he'd love to come over and be on my podcast sometime.
Anytime, bro.
Sounds great.
Tony Arterburn, thank you.
Thank you. Both.
Thanks, Deborah. Love you guys.
Love you.
Thanks, guys. Bye. Appreciate you.
I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for me. I'm not signed on to killing all those old people or those black babies. Fuck you, motherfucking New World Order. I will get your ass. Delay that. It pisses me off. You sign on to playing God, you get burned. And all you dumbasses that serve the New World Order are idiots. Playing God all day. Deciding who lives and who dies.
penis man.
And then I find out they're all screwing little kids and devil worshiping. Of course they are. Oh, you're the big elites. Oprah Winfrey and Ted Turner and Bill Clinton and Epstein, all in that seven-story pervert building in New York. What a bunch of freaks. And the fact that those pedophiles, and I'm calling Oprah Winfrey one, hope she burns in hell. Every damn one of you's a piece of crap. And you're going to be judged. So you just continue to enjoy hurting babies and hurting old people and hurting homeless people and turn us all into a bunch of idiots. Because you will be destroyed.
Mom, I'm transgender.